Here's a little bit of Deputy Brendan Griffin asking his questions, or some of his questions yesterday.
Again, we're looking at 2017 here. Agency breakfast and lunch series, 4 days with clients, agencies and presenters, €13,388. God only knows what they were eating over 4 days, but that's a hell of a bill. Bruce Springsteen concerts, €12,000. That's 2016, it looks like. Head of sales, client agency, golf outing, jackets, golf balls, €7,500. Phil Collins and Robbie Williams, Aviva Stadium, 50 tickets, €6,358. I've heard of Let Me Entertain You, but that's a bit ridiculous. And then 200 units of flip-flops for the summer party for agencies and clients, €4,956. So 200 pairs of flip-flops at €34 each. This is what's going through this account. This isn't a barter account, this is a slush fund. And all of these entries ask more questions of RTE. Who was benefiting? Who knew what? Why wasn't this showing up? Could I ask the former chairperson, when this was transferred to the balance sheet back in 2020, you were chair at the time, did this come up with the board?
No, we were not aware of the existence of the barter account, and I have checked back with my colleagues, two of my former colleagues.
You weren't
on the
aware.
Board, two of whom were accountants. One was the former CFO of the Economist Group in the UK, and I contacted him this week and asked him if he knew anything of these activities, and he replied no.
So, on one hand, we're being told that barter accounts are a normal part of a media organisation, and on another hand, the chairperson doesn't know that there's a barter account in the organisation.
That's correct.
And do you think you should have known?
I think I should have been informed, and I think all my colleagues on the board should have been informed, and this should have been highlighted to us.
In relation to Taisho, the musical, 2.2 million lost. I was roughly calculating this morning, that's the TV licence fee from every household in the town of Tralee and every household in the town of Killarney. And then you still go on to say you're proud of the achievement. If that's what you're proud of in RTE, I mean, we might as well all pack up and go home. How can you justify 2.2 million of a loss and stand over it as that you're proud of it? That's an enormous loss. It's a disgrace, it's a scandal.
We took a creative and commercial risk, to put it, for the best of reasons, to try create something unique for Irish families and for children at Christmas.
It was unique, all right. Certainly.
There you go. That's a little bit of some of the questions to Moya Doherty that Deputy Brendan Griffin was asking yesterday. He's with me on the line. Deputy Griffin, good morning to you. Another very long day in the bunker-like atmosphere of the Oireachtas Committee room. What's your overall view of what you learned yesterday? Lots of different aspects, lots of things to get through, but what's your overall view of where things stand now from what you were able to get out of the Executive Board yesterday?
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning to everyone listening. It was another tedious day, a tough day, almost 7 hours down below in the committee room one. But we did get more information, more importantly, I suppose, maybe than what was revealed yesterday, were the documents that were supplied to us on Tuesday night, very late, albeit on Tuesday night and early yesterday, providing more information in relation to what was going on, details about contracts and guarantees for Ryan Tuberty, and then of course the Taisho, the huge losses that were incurred by the Taisho musical project, and lots of other things then as well. That list of the barter account, or the slush fund as I'd call it, in terms of the hospitality and the various other out of control expenditure, I suppose, that we saw in RTE that was going on unchecked, I suppose, since the middle of the last decade, really. So we did get that information, and I think it proved that we were right as a committee to insist on RTE returning yesterday, because there were some, maybe they were saying we should push this back and give more time, but I think it was important when we met last Friday to push for another meeting yesterday, and that led to the production of all those documents on Tuesday and Wednesday, but also as well the information that we heard yesterday in the committee then as well was also helpful in terms of moving this forward, because I think it's important that we would try to resolve matters at RTE and resolve uncertainty as quickly as possible, and to try to get the reform moving as quickly as possible. It will take an awful lot of time. The government initiative to try to resolve this is going to take months. It's not a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
But it was important that people heard what was happening, the types of expenditure that was going on, and I suppose the level of deception as well, as I would call it, in relation to this, what they call the barter account, that was going on over a number of years. And there are lots of questions still to be answered. There's no question about that.
And but can you be sure?
It will require forensic accounting, you know.
Yeah, in terms and there's of a forensic accountant going in there on Monday to start off one of the many reviews. Can you be sure of getting clear answers? Because at the moment, it seems all RTEs just seem all over the place. An example of which, you were sent a message by RTE the night before the committee meeting, and you were told there are three barter accounts. Yesterday, you asked the chief financial officer. He said, no. There's one barter account, but there's three separate companies feeding into it. That's two different organs of RTE telling you two completely different things about this very important and controversial account.
Yeah, they're in chaos, I would say, at the moment. And there's, you know, a dysfunction is the word that's been mentioned by a lot of people to describe actually what's going on at the moment. They really are at sea now completely on this. And that explanation yesterday about the three companies feeding into one account, look, there are probably accountants listening this morning, they'll understand that to you and I and the ordinary Joe Soaps, like, this is, you know, this is kind of hard to try to get your head around, but the fact that something that was so contentious would be so poorly communicated by the organisation to an Oireachtas committee the night before a hearing, which led to all sorts of theories and all sorts of confusion, epitomises really what's going on at RTE. And there, you know, you could see then yesterday there's a clear gulf now emerging between the executive members and the oversight board.
Yeah.
And I think Seán O'Rahilly's comments yesterday clearly defined that. So this is a huge issue now, and it's a massive question for the minister that she'll have to address in terms of how do we continue, even just to keep the ship afloat over the coming months while the reviews are going on, while all of the work is going on. Because right now, I would say the relationship there is extremely unhealthy, even within the executive itself, and I would say even within the board itself. It looks like it's all out civil war, if you ask me, within the organisation, and that's not healthy. And look, ultimately, this is our, you know, this is our national broadcaster. Like, this is a hugely important institution for the country. It's massively important for information, for reliable information, for our democracy. And it's not good for anyone when RTE is in such chaos. And unfortunately, that's where it is this morning.
Let me ask you this. Were you happy with the answers given by Moya Doherty when you were questioning her about what she knew as the then chairperson of the board? She says, no one told me anything. I wasn't aware from that point of view.
No, I wasn't happy. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's the position of a board is to scrutinise, is to keep control and to be on top of what's going on in the organisation. And to me, it looks like there is a very hands-off approach. It looks like there is an attitude that, you know, I'll only learn something if I'm told. And that's not the way to operate. And you have to be more forensic. And you have to be, you know, keeping a closer eye on your organisation than that. And I felt that the default position was, you know, I knew nothing. It's almost like the Fawlty Towers Manuel position, like, you know, and like that's not good enough in such a huge organisation with a massive budget and such an important remit. I think that just isn't good enough. It's not acceptable. So I wasn't happy with that, and, you know, I wasn't happy with a number of other things as well, but I have asked for follow-ups in relation to, in particular, I suppose, the Remuneration Committee, which Moya Doherty was a chair of, which only met three times in 2017, but then only met once per annum in the subsequent years, and particularly in the crucial 2018 to 2020 years, only met one time. Why is that?
Yeah, and would they or should they have seen things or asked for things or had an input into what we saw as well with the documentation released to you this week? An extraordinary letter written by Dee Forbes, a letter of comfort to Ryan Turberty, saying, I won't ask you for a pay cut in the next 5 years. That was written in July of 2020. Mm-hmm. We didn't even have a vaccine. Businesses were closed. That's people right. had lost their jobs. No one, the world was upside down. And this is what was being written and being promised to a major star. It's astonishing.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary commitment to make to anyone at that time, because, as you know, the whole situation in Kerry and throughout the country at the time was just really terrible. Businesses that were closed, never knew if they were going to reopen. You know, as you said, no vaccine, and the vaccine didn't come along for 6 months after that, and all sorts of uncertainty for business. And yet, this one individual was able to get this massive guarantee of proper astronomical wages at an organisation that was laying off staff. And bear in mind, in our own county, for example, in Ballinalowl, in Radonagael, to your colleagues there, many of them would have been offered redundancies in recent years on very, very modest wages, may I say, as well. And like the top-ups, even, that we're talking about in the context of this whole debacle, would have kept a couple of staff in that station, which is a massive impact, for example, in a rural community, relatively speaking. And this is what we were talking about, and this was happening throughout the organisation. There were others as well in different parts of the country that were suffering similar cutbacks and similar redundancies, that sort of thing. And yet, at the same time, then we learn that this was going on at the very top, and it's just sickening for people. And one of the things yesterday, like in terms of 2.2 million, imagine what I think you can only imagine what Radio Kerry would do with 2.2 million.
Just on that, and in fairness, and you can talk about maybe the lack of planning or the lack of market research or the muscling into an already crowded private market of Christmas pantomimes and shows. What do you say to someone? Says, there's no guarantee a show will be a financial success. There's always a risk involved. They weighed up the prospects and felt it was worth the investment. Andrew Lloyd Webber has had his share of flops. There's no guarantee of success, particularly in show business.
There's no guarantee. That's fair enough. But this miscalculation was so gross that there is no excuse for it. I mean, you know, there's a worst case scenario, and then there's the late Taisha, the musical scenario. This is incredible stuff in terms of how badly they got it wrong in relation to audience figures.
They came in at 10 to 15% of projected ticket sales, effectively.
That's just off the charts. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest. I mean, we all know that, look, you have to encourage creativity, and people have to go out on a limb. And some projects are failures, and some are, you know, overnight successes. But this was an overnight failure, and it seems that we'll have to find out more about this. But like, it seems that there wasn't the adequate research done, there wasn't the adequate homework done, and as I said, 2.2 million. I equated it yesterday to roughly the licence fee from the entire town of Killarney and the entire town of Tralee.
Well, to me, it didn't seem fair. It didn't seem really the remit of RT to be muscling in a private sector area which was already well full and already well operated by people working in arts and theatre. It seemed a little bit unbalanced in terms of what RT's mission statement should be. But that's a more artistic thing to be talking about, or maybe something for the future of RT. Let me put this point. It was a point I was going to make, but one of our listeners makes it for me in terms of the issue of the flip-flops and the spending on corporate clients and advertising and all of that. Listener says, there's a tendency for grandstanding on some of the issues. Corporate spending on clients is part of the world of big business and advertising. I will not take some of the perks given in international business. It would make unpleasant reading. Yes, the committees must get to the facts, but spare us the shock, horror, exclamations, please. What's your response to that, Brendan Griffin? The point being made by Jordan Leary, I say, look, we brought in 1.6 billion over 11 years. This is less than 1% of the spending. It's the way things work. Sure, it doesn't look good when you stack them all together and talk about flip-flops, but that this is how you get advertising in the door.
Yeah, we all live in the real world. We all know that business relationships need to be fostered and need to be looked after. That's fine. That's perfect. And, you know, I accept that 100%. What's at issue here is that there was an element of deception here from a semi-public body that we need to delve into. Why wasn't this transparent? Why wasn't this all for everyone to see, which is the way it should be, the national broadcaster? This was all swept under the carpet. There was an effort here, a major attempt to deceive here, in my view, and this story is what is at issue here. I see that, you know, some of the expenditure here you can understand, looking after relationships with major clients who spend an awful lot of money, that's fine. But just let the people know who are financing it, that's where their money is going. But actually what was going on here is that there was no transparency whatsoever. These lists were hidden, this money was hidden, and that's not good enough at all from a semi-state body. And we need to find out more about who exactly designed this. We still haven't got to the bottom of who exactly was behind this effort to conceal all of these this account and payments.
And indeed, the payments when it comes to contracts, a contract delivered which showed that it was only signed in April of this year, despite the fact it was in operation for 3 years, and not signed by the RTE side at all, which is very puzzling.
There are loads of examples of just really poor governance. And look, everyone makes mistakes. That's fair enough. No one. I mean, I was in there yesterday. I have a job to do in terms of asking the questions. I'm not saying that I haven't made mistakes. I've made loads of mistakes in my life. But the problem is here that we're talking about the scale of this. It's massive money, number one. But number two, this is all happening at a time where information and broadcasting and, you know, democracy is under real threat, and from you know, social media and from, you know, all the reputational from information that's not reliable, and the reputation of the national broadcaster as a reliable source is so important, and that's all now been diluted, and that's all been really damaged, I think, in recent times. And that's probably one of the key issues here, that, you know, at a time where we need a very strong, reliable, robust national broadcaster, they've been almost humiliated, I would say, at this stage in public. And we're almost at a point, I was talking to a colleague yesterday, are we at a point where we're almost at an RUC PSNI moment, where the brand is so toxic and so damaged that there has to be a complete rebuilding and repurposing? I'm not sure, time will tell, but it is very, very damaged at the moment.
That's
not good for anyone.
Will we find out who had the car for 5 years on loan?
I suspect we will. I mean, there are rumours going around the corridors of Leinster House. There was one name in particular that was circulating yesterday. But, you know, again, it's speculation. And again, look, I suppose, like, the car, it just epitomises the culture and the attitude. You know, it wasn't signed off.
It wasn't approved. So does it epitomise the looseness that was there, the overall looseness with regards to everything at that top level?
Yeah, I mean, like, this isn't a crime that's punishable by death, like, but it just shows that, look, there was car allowances there for stars to draw. My understanding is that they were unvouched. I've asked for the details, the follow-up on that. But it seems that there are maybe questions in relation to taxation, benefits of kind, that sort of thing. But it seems that at the same time, you know, there were people who didn't even have cars that were drawing this. We don't know that for certain, but that's the information that I have, and that I've looked for clarification on that. But this case about the car only being returned yesterday, it kind of sums up where we're at, really, that some people haven't got it yet, the penny hasn't dropped with some people yet, that the station is in crisis, and, you know, there's still that culture there of we'll do what we want, you know. And we saw reports earlier in the week about, you know, an ad being filmed on the Montrose complex by one of the RTE presenters there 2 weeks ago, like the day after the whole Tuberty story broke. And this is clearly against the rules. But again, it seems to be ingrained in the culture that, you know, we'll do what we want to do, and we'll make whatever private benefits out of our tea as we can. And I asked about that yesterday. I raised that is it right that staff, RTE employees, would also have their own podcasts, for example, where they'd be benefiting financially, privately, from their RTE positions.
And direct competition.
In competition with RTE. I mean, that's something that has to be seriously looked at now, and there has to be a major review of what is and what isn't acceptable by RTE employees. And as I put to the former chairperson yesterday, I feel there's a culture there, and there's there are blurred lines in RTE going right back to Riverdance days, when some people would question Riverdance and how that was established and how the benefits, financial benefits of Riverdance were distributed. And that's something that I feel really needs to be looked at now and has to be addressed into the future, because it's a position of massive influence. You know, the audience figures and the reach that a station like RTE has in this country, albeit a, you know, a small market, but at the same time the proportionate reach that it has is huge, and therefore that's very valuable from a financial point of view, and therefore there has to be very clear rules and strict governance in relation to what is and what isn't acceptable for the major stars.